Welcome everybody to the fifth lecture of our deep learning, deep reinforcement learning course. Are there any questions before we start? Doesn't seem so, no questions. Well, if you had some question even during, then please don't hesitate to stop me. So if you don't have any specific questions, then let us start a bit untraditionally by going through the assignment. So I'm sorry I wasn't able to prepare the assignment sooner. I wanted to do some changes and improvements on them, and I got caught up by some technicalities. So the assignments are available on the website, still not in the Recodex, but they should be added to Recodex soon. And you can see that the deadline of the assignment was extended by a week, right? So they should have had the deadline of 10th of November, but of course they weren't available. So the deadline was pushed by a week later. There are three of them. The first one is the assignment which we talked about on the previous practical, the one which already was, and it concerns implementation of various versions or variants of the temporal different methods. So the idea is that you should be implementing the generally n-step methods, SARSA, expected SARSA, and tree backup, and either as an on-policy or off-policy algorithm. The behavior policy is always the epsilon greedy policy, and then the target policy is either the behavior policy for on-policy or the greedy policy for the off-policy learning, right? It's a new assignment. So we will see how it goes with the evaluation. If you think that you have implemented everything correctly and doesn't go through, well, then it can easily happen that I did some mistakes. So I try to minimize it by you never know. The idea of this assignment is just to check whether you did the implementations correctly. So there are no hyperparameter tunings or something. The main idea is just to implement the algorithm as told to. As for the parameters, we have the learning rate, the number of episodes, the epsilon, gamma, and then the mode, SARSA, expected SARSA, or tree backup, and for the n-step methods, and whether this should be off-policy or on-policy. I'm using the TEXI environment. It's a discrete environment with some number of actions and states. I actually don't remember from the top of my head what exactly it does. So let's have a look. Yeah, so there is this map and you have a taxi. You can go like there are like four interesting states. And your job is to pick up the passengers at one of the locations and then drop it off in another. And you get some points, like 20 for a successful drop-off. Then you lose 1 point for every time it takes, which means you should do it as fast as possible. And there are also some penalties for doing the incorrect actions or the incorrect movements, right? So you can move in four directions, you can probably pick, and you can pick up and drop off the passengers. The specific rules are not that important. The idea is that it's sufficiently complex discrete environment. That's the only thing which we actually need here. We create a generator so that we will all have the same random seed, and hopefully you should get the same episodes when implementing the algorithms as I get. We will use the action value function, so the number of states, size, the number of states, and the number of actions. Now, what I did for you is I have implemented the like the generation of the episodes, right? So we reset the environment and then we create a next action. The next action is generated by the epsilon greedy strategy. So either it's greedy or it's a random, random action from the action space. I also measure what probability this action has, right? With probability of epsilon, like epsilon divided by number of actions, that's the probability of action being chosen from the exploration part. And then with probability of one minus epsilon, we choose the greedy action, right? So we don't have to do this, you will just get it. And then in each step, we like do a step forward. So these next actions, next states, and next action probabilities became the actions, action probabilities and states. We'll do the step in the environment and we'll prepare the next action and the next action probability. That's because of the SARSA algorithm, which needs also to have the future action. Now we will define the target policy by looking at the greedy policy first. And if it's not off policy, then we make it epsilon greedy. So the greedy one is diminished by one minus epsilon factor, and then we use a uniform, like all ones, divided by epsilon divided by the number of actions, right? So this target policy is really the current target policy. And now there is this, there is only one to do, this a bit longer to do. And in that to do, you need to update the state action value function Q. You need to use arc.n as the number of steps in the TD update, the off policy and on policy, well, you which tells you what policy to use. Note that for the SARSA algorithm and the expected SARSA for n larger than one, you need to use this explicit important sampling, while for the expected SARSA and one step or the tree backup, you don't need to do it explicitly. Yep. The idea is that you should do the updates as soon as you can. So whenever you have all the values which are required for performing an update, you should do it. For the behavior probability, you should use the action probability of the one which corresponds, right? So when the action was generated, you also got it probability. So this is the behavior policy probability. So you should use the corresponding for the action. And for the target policy, you should use the target policy computed above here for all the target policies in the update. So if you have an update and there are like several behavior policies and several target policies in the update, then the behavior policies are the ones returned by this next action probability. And the target policy should be always the one which we just computed. So it always should be the current version of the target policy. Don't forget that when done is true, like the episode has ended, we don't use the bootstrapping anymore. So we don't look at this Q value estimate for the next state, right? You can just get this by multiplying it by not done or something like that. And when the episode ends and we are using a multi-step method, then there will still be some more state action pairs which will need to be updated. Right. For these, you won't have the full n step update, but still they are being used still being updated. So these updates should be performed in the order in which you encountered them during the episode. And during this episode, just keep the target policy without any change. So it's still this target policy up there. There are some arbitrary choices here, which are there just because I want the solution to be unique. Yep. So that's a technical implementation which you can just do to make sure that you really know what the algorithms should do. When you look at the examples, there are quite a lot of them. So SARSA for one step, when it gets somewhere, when it's off policy, it's slightly better. For four steps, you can see that the results are considerably better. And for the of policy they even seem to be adverse. And know that these are the results of the behavior policies, right? Not of the target policies. So the fact that it's verse for of policy doesn't mean anything, because you are training the value estimates for the greedy policy, and then you are using this epsilon greedy policy to actually use it. Right, so it's more just a reference for you to show whether you are doing the correct things, and then we have got expected SARSA and the tree backup algorithm, a lot of combinations. So that's just the technical algorithm, and then you can use it in this Q learning tiles. So the goal is to improve the Q learning assignment, where we should drive up the hill. By using linear function approximation, so just linear function, just weights for features with tile coding, right? So each state is not coded, not just one number, but actually by some number of tiles, so by fixed number of states. And these tiles, they are shared across various states, so there is some kind of generalization. The environment methods are the same as in the Q-learning. However, they are updated so that the state returned by the environment step method is the list containing the indices of the tiles, right? So this feature vector, you can consider it to be like, I don't know, tile hot, right? It contains a lot of zeros, and there are fixed number of ones, which are the tiles which belong to this given state. And this state is list of these indices, right? Because it doesn't make sense to get a lot of zeros. Instead, we just get the indices of the correct one. So it's like a generalized one-hot encoding. And because it's just a linear approximation, then the action value function is approximated as a sum of these weights, whose indices are returned by this step method. This observation space is now a vector. So it will give you a list. And the ith element is the number of weights used by first I elements of the state, right? So specifically, the last number, the last number in this NVEC field, is the total number of weights, which is probably the only thing which you care about. Yep, so there is the template which we will go through. It's enough to pass the assignment with just Q-learning, but if you try either N-step SARSA or tree backup, they converge a little faster, well, maybe even a bit more than little. The default number of the tiles in the tile encoding is set to 8. You can overwrite it in any way you want, but you can easily solve the assignments with this default one. Yep. So as for the template specifies some options. There is an epsilon here, and also epsilon final and epsilon final at. We have already seen in the DQN that it makes sense, or I even talked about it, that it makes sense to make the epsilon get smaller, right? When we want to, like, if you are working on policy, then decreasing the exploration throughout the training might make sense. So the template also like starts with a given epsilon. And if this epsilon final at is defined, then it will use, well, I use an exponential decay from the given epsilon to the final epsilon. And it will reach the final epsilon at the epsilon final at some episode, and it will stay at the epsilon final at. If you would like this to be a linear decay, then just remove the log here, remove the XP, and you will get the linear one. Right, so this is there just for you if it's useful. Then you need to find out some good learning rate, some number of tiles, and maybe any other algorithms. So we fix the random seed. We create the weights, so not states anymore, so it's called W. It has as many weights as described, as being written by the environment, and then the rest is all up to you. So there's this training part, and after that, the evaluation part, where you start evaluation and you should choose probably the greedy action, right? And when we are constructing the wrapper, we pass the given number of tiles. So by default, this discrete mounting wrapper is able to handle the tile encoding by itself. Yep, so that's the Q-learning tiles, like a practical version of this one. But the most interesting assignment is the Q network assignment. So the goal will be to solve the cardpole environment. Well, that's less exciting, but it's the environment without any discretization, so at least something new. Using the Q-learning with the neural network as a function approximation. So we will also have a more advanced DQN assignment on this Wednesday, but this is like the first step. This is actually the first assignment where we'll actually be using some frameworks. So the template by default provides a simple a code, which is meant to be used with TensorFlow, but feel free to use PyTorch instead if you like, because we only want to achieve some good behavior on the environment. Like the Recodex doesn't care what you use, so feel free to use PyTorch if you want. So these continuous environments, they are nearly the same as in the discrete case, but the states are vectors of the real valued observations, right? So the states are some tensors, and they have the shape which you can find out by looking at nf.observation space.shape. Yep. You can use generally whatever architecture you want, but this is a very simple assignment. So just using a single hidden layer with some small number of units may be a good start. And your goal is just to reach the an average return of 400, right? So I wanted 490 before, so I just want 400. Well, the idea is for you to experience the training with Q networks is actually quite fragile, so you will. So it's enough if you just get to the reasonable value. The evaluation limit is 10 minutes for each test. So you can still train in Recodex if you want, but you can also pre-train your network if you want and just submit the trained model. And as for the template, we can go through it. So first, there is like a small setting here, which makes sure that you will only see TensorFlow errors. TensorFlow has a bad habit of reporting a lot of things to the console. So unless overwritten by the environment, we make sure that it keeps quiet. Now there are some arguments, but they are not specified, so you will need to choose the values which you want: batch size, learning rate, gamma, epsilon. I also have this code for doing the exponential epsilon decay, so if you want, you can specify the epsilons, and you can also specify, for example, hidden layer size, and there is also this target update frequency if you want to do the target network. There is the network class here. In the constructor, you should create a suitable model, and the rest of the code assumes that it has been stored as a self.model and has been compiled, right? There is one of the reasons why the assignment took me a bit longer to prepare. Normally, you would probably just use train on batch or test on batch, but these methods have some considerable overhead on extremely small batches and networks, which is exactly the setting in which we are using it. Like we are using it for simulating the episodes with batches of one element containing four numbers or something, right? So this new overhead of 1 millisecond of this extremely large, considering that it takes, I don't know, like 1/10 of a millisecond to actually run the neural network. So in order to avoid it, we need to use this TF function by ourselves. So this is a train method, which is assumed to be just working with batches. And when training, you have generally two possibilities. Either you will pass in the Q network, you know that the generated network, right, or the network should process the states on the input, and it should generate the QA for these Q values for these states on the output, right? So you have a vector containing as many elements as actions. Now, when you want to update one of these values, like during training, you want to update one of these values. So either you can pass all the new Q values and only one The only one is different, right? You want the model to keep the same prediction but change one. It's simpler because you will just generate the output of the size which the network generates, but it's a bit unnatural because you need to compute these values first. So if you want, you can change this method to pass only the one new Q value and the index of which of these it is in the output, right? So feel free to use whatever it wants, but this implementation just does the first thing. So there is nothing interesting here. You get the states and the resulting Q values. We call the minimize method. Right, the loss is just the compiled loss. The true values are the Q values, and the predictions is whatever the model gives you for the states when in the training mode, right? And we want to minimize with respect to all the trainable variables of the model. So this is just a small placeholder. The same thing applies for prediction. So we once again use the TF function, explicitly call the model with a given badge. And if you want, there is this copy weights from method, which copy the weights from the given network to the current one. You may or may not use it. It's up to you, just here so that you don't have to look for it by yourself. As for the rest of the code, after some necessary initialization, we create the network. Then we create the replay buffer. It's an important part. This deck also has the max length parameter. So if you want to have the fixed length of the replay buffer, it's possible to do it, but I don't do it for this simple example. And then we create a transition type, and the transition is like the SARS apart. So it's state, action, reward, done, and next state. These are all the information required by the Q learning update. And now we need to do the training. So once when we are training, we need to once again choose an action and do the update. So when choosing the actions, you can use the network to predict the value of the current state. When you can create a batch, you cannot really just create a list because when it's a list, it will be considered like multiple inputs to the network. So I create a queue array here, which will be the batch containing this one state, and whenever we run the predict, I just take, I like unwrap the batch to the single element. So that's straightforward. Then we append things to the replay buffer, and then the important thing is to actually do the training. So once the replay buffer is large enough, we should do the training, which means we should sample uniformly in the from the buffer, and compute the target Q values using one step learning method and perform training, right? There is this exponential decay of epsilons if you want it. Here should be the final evaluation, and that should be it. We are not applying any discretization wrapper, so we are just wrapping the Karpo environment in the evaluation wrapper, which just measures the accuracies and so on. So these are the assignments prepared for you, and they will be followed by a competition assignment on this Wednesday. So, are there any questions? Nope. All simple. Then, let's get to the lecture. We will spend the whole lecture by talking about rainbow. Well, there won't be any unicorns. But the rainbow is like a substantially improved version of the deep Q learning network. So where we are standing, we are using functional approximation to approximating Q and V values. The action and the state value function and action value functions. We are training the function approximations, neural networks, by minimizing this mean squared value error objective, which is just the mean square error of the estimates weighted by this state distribution, usually at on policy one. We optimize the models usually using the gradient descent, and we talked about these deep Q networks, which processed images on the input and generated the actions for the controller. They started by processing some smaller inputs. the frame skipping technique was used. So only every fourth frame was being considered and the action was repeating for the rest of them. The network gets four frames at the beginning. It uses three convolutional layers and one fully connected layer, one output layer. It's trained to minimize the Q-learning loss. And there were some important improvements. One was this experience replay, which means we use this replay buffer and then we train from it. The separate target network, so this estimation of the next state is performed by using a different set of weights, which are copied once in a while to the network. And the reward clipping is being used, so all the rewards are just plus or minus one. And during training, we use this Huber loss or clipped loss for training. And this was the set of hyperparameters. The interesting thing were a number of training frames, quite a lot. The decay of the epsilon, for example, and I think that was it. And now we can get to Rainbow, right? So there have been, like, once the DQN network was out, in the next year or two, there were many improvements suggested which could be used to achieve better results. And then in the end of 2017, there was a paper also by DeepMind which combined seven improvements into a single model, right? So they used various improvements to the DQN which were compatible, could be joined together and create a model called Rainbow. It's Rainbow because, like, they combined all these individual training curves and gotten this this Rainbow one. So we will talk about the individual improvements and then about how they are combined together. So we will get to this image later. So there are six of these improvements, or seven of these improvements actually. Let's get started. We have already talked about the maximization bias in Q-learning, right? Because we use the same function to both determine which is the maximizing action and then to the estimating its value. And that means that, like, when we are choosing a function, an action, it's because we have a nice estimate, positive estimate for it. And then when we use the same set of weights to actually evaluate it, then, well, it will be nice and positive, right? We have chosen the one which maximizes this value, so its value is going to be large. We have already seen it, and we talked about the double Q-learning, which contained two sets of estimates, one for choosing the action and the second one for actually estimating it. So instead of computing just the maximum here, right, we computed an action which seemed to be the best using this Q1, and then use the second set of weights, the Q2 or table of Q2, to evaluate it. So we will do it very similarly, but this time we already have two networks actually, right? We have the target networks which we use to compute the estimates to compute the estimates for the next state, that we use it for doing for estimating the return, right? And then we have the set of weights which we are training with. So we will use the fact that we already have two models. And here, instead of both choosing the action and evaluating it by the target network, we choose the best action according to the current network, to the one which will be trained, and then we use the target network to only evaluate the action. Right, so we didn't add anything more compared to this previous DQN, but we are using the target network even less. Right, we are choosing the maximizing action by the network being trained, and we use the target network only to estimate that one specific action. It seems like a very small difference, it actually makes a non-trivial effect to do it. There are several figures in the paper which illustrate this. So in this small figure, what we do is that we show the bias. assume that we are in a situation which is very similar to this multi-armed bandit settings, when we have got a lot of action values. There is some noise in each of these actions. So they have expectation of zero or something, but we but there is this non-trivial noise, right? So if the larger the number of actions it is, the higher the bias is, right? Because the larger the actions we have, the higher there is the chance that one of these errors will be large and positive. And if we just do the maximization, where we choose the best action and take its value, then you can see that the bias increases, and it's even large, like two things, it's large and it's also increasing with the number of actions. But if we instead like choose the action using one of these Q value functions and then estimate it using second one, you can see that the bias, it seems to be unbiased. Right, so this is a very simple action. So let's consider a bit more complex, but still still artificial example. So consider the following function. This is the QSA for one given action. Right, we are considering three possibilities. So this is like one model, second model, and third model. And we are, for this one specific action, this purple line, that's the true Q function, and we train it by sampling 10 points on it. These are these green ones, right? And then the curve is what the function approximation gives us, like that's the when we try to fit a polynom on the using the points. Right, this is just a sine function. This is, I don't know, some bell-shaped curve. And this is again another one, but I have kind of forgot what the difference was between these two. Yep. It's just a bit larger. Yep. And we do this and we sample the different points on the curve for the different actions. So when we, what we do, we have 10 points, 10 points here, and we always use 9 to estimate the value for one action, right? So we have the estimates for the first action, we will estimate it without the first point, for the second, we will estimate it without this one, and so on and so on. Here, you can see all the estimations, so all the functions are here, and the maximum, which is the one, which is the non-dotted, the dashed one, right? You can see that these are the maximization biases, right? Even if the true value is really, goes really here, one of these estimates is a bit larger than the others, but because we are computing the maximum, then that's the bias. The same thing happens here, where the maximum is really a bit weird shaped compared to what the real value was. And here it's even more pronounced, where you can see that the maximum is really large, right? And the problem is that when we computed this value, we just taken the one which is the largest one, right? If we instead took random of those, then we would get the estimate which would be much more closer to the real value, right? And then, yeah, and you can actually see it. So with the double Q learning, the bias is the blue thing, and with the normal learning, the red thing is the bias. So this double Q estimate actually improved the situation. So this is all artificial. So let's get to some real environments. So here are various games in the Atari learning environment. And what are these numbers? So this red estimates, that are the value estimates of DQN, and the blue one are the value estimates of the double DQN. And then this blue horizontal line, that's the true value, and this red line is the red value, that's the true value for the DQN estimates. These values were generated by like stopping the training after some number of time and then actually like evaluating what the network looks like. So these estimates like the real estimates were estimating by simulating the policy for quite some time. And you can see that the double key learning actually makes sense to actually decreases the bias. It can still be biased. Here you can see that the estimates are a bit large, but it still is much better. And then when we look at the final effect or influence on the score, here you can see the value estimates of some game, and you can see that at this point something like happened. The value estimates are converging they change rapidly. Oscillating, that's what I'm searching for. And you can see that when it happens, then the value function, like the real score, like our behavior in the environment actually goes down. So this DQN can happen, like this maximization bias can appear. When it appears, then our network thinks that we are actually, we will generate more, that our policy is really like, biased in the positive side, but on you can see that the effect on the final score is actually the opposite one. Yeah. So compared to the original DQN, you can see that the mean got increased, and the median got even above the 100%. These are evaluated using the original paper of the DQN. However, people started performing the evaluation in a different way. First thing is that they allowed the evaluation episode to take not just 5 but 30 minutes. And also we talked about how 30 different starts are being used for DQN, right? That we add 0 or 1, 2, 3 and 29, like no ops, like nothing is happening at the beginning, to get 30 different settings. But these are very similar to what they are all very similar. So what people started to doing is to assess the generalization abilities. They let the people to play the games, and then they are using the prefixes of the humans. Like, so you let the human to play for, I don't know, 10 seconds, and then you let the machine to continue. So instead of the no ops at the beginning, we now are going to use the real starts of the episodes. So you can see that the original DQN is substantially worse than or in this setting, right? So the median gets less, like is even less than 50%, and the mean also goes down. However, this deep WQN is still performing reasonably well, and seems the decrease wasn't as dramatic. So it seems we are probably able to generalize a bit better. And then like these have the same hyperparameter for comparison, and then the tuned version can get us to more than 100%. So we for the median, so nice thing, we surpass the median even with the human starts. So that's one thing. Then the second improvement will be a prioritized replay. In the prioritized replay, what we do is we don't sample the transitions uniformly in the replay buffer. The thing is that when we sample something, we then train the network. And if the network can predict the outcomes well, then it won't learn much, right? And the amount like of error which there is between the prediction and the estimation is the TD error. That's the like whatever the network predicts and what we get from the estimate of the return. And in order for the training to be like as efficient as possible, we will sample the transitions not uniformly, but by considering the TD error. So we will sample them with a probability which will be proportional to the TD error, which will be exponentiated by W, or the TD error to W. Like this W will allow us to say how strongly do we actually want to use the TD error during sampling. For zero, it will be uniform, so that's what we did before. For one, it will be a full TD error, but usually it's smaller than one. Yep. So the new transitions, when we insert them to the replay buffer, we want to encourage the model to see it, right? The idea is that we don't want to overfit on the same old data, so we want to motivate the model to look at least once on every input. And what we do is whenever we add a transition to the replay buffer, we look at what the maximum probability looks like in the current learning replay buffer and use that as the probability of this new transition. So whenever we are inserting, we are not really using this value, but instead the largest of these values in the replay buffer, and we will update it only when this transition is being used for training, right? So then when we sample the batch, we compute the update, and the update also gives us the new TD errors. So we put these transitions back with this new update probabilities. We only update the probabilities whenever we train on the data, right? Otherwise, we would spend too much time on computing the actual TD errors. So what we do is we only update them whenever we use them for training. Now, the problem is that now we are sampling these according to these probabilities instead of uniformly. However, this mean square value error, which we are minimizing, it actually assumes that these states are being sampled from the state distribution view. But we have broken it, and instead we are sampling according to to our distribution, to the temporal different errors. So we need to make sure that we actually minimize the correct function. And to compensate it, we need to use important sampling. Like we have already seen this problem, actually. We are sampling as the states with this P distribution. Instead, we would like them to sample them uniformly from the replay buffer, because in the replay buffer, they are present with this mu distribution. So we will use an explicit important sampling factor that should be like a very straightforward for you at this point. And what we are normalizing, well, the target policy, like what we did, that the target distribution is uniform. Right, so that's like the target policy. And then the behavior policy, the one which we used it to sample from, is this PT. Right, so this factor, important sampling ratio rho, is fraction, and is exponentiated to another weight beta. The thing is, maybe we don't want to do it too strongly, so this beta allow us to actually like change the strength or the force of this important sampling ratio. However, we have seen that the important sampling has extremely large variance, right? If this PT would be less than 1/n, then this factor would be large. And this factor being large is impractical, because it means the gradients will be large and the training of the deep neural network will become unstable. So the authors, they just say that for stability reasons, they are using these raw divided by the maximum ones. So what does this mean is that we take the important sampling ratio, but we scale it so that the actions with the largest value of rho have a value of 1, right? And the others get down. So the idea is that if we have, in the end, hopefully, we would converge to a situation where these important sampling ratios are one. Like, well, the temporal difference error will go down. So ideally, we would just make the same errors everywhere or something. So I got lost track of what I wanted to say. So that's true. But in a sense, what how you can make sense of it, and the authors don't actually do it in the paper, is that you want to clip the size of the gradients which will be used during training. So what we do is we use this 1/maximum of this row as a clip to the learning rate. So in a sense, you can consider this that we are like moving this to the learning rate, and this makes sure that the effective learning rate, like the learning rate times the important sampling ratio factor, is always limited by the original learning rate value, right? So even if this can be 20, we make sure that we decrease it, right? So in a sense, we are like decreasing dynamically the learning rate so that we never do updates which would be too far off. Yep. Yes, definitely. Yes. When you have this value error, like whenever we are training, I don't know if it is written here somewhere nicely. No. So let me go back to show it explicitly. This is the loss function which we are using, this important sampling is just like being applied here, like times rho when we are sampling it. So when we are like the loss which we are computing the gradient of is just being multiplied by rho. I'm thinking that's how it works. That's what we did for the, or sorry, if you want to say something, then please interrupt me. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yes. It may, but that doesn't really matter at this point. Like this PT is a distribution which we use to sample the action. So even if we would compute it now, it would be different. It still is some distribution which we got somehow, and we use it to sample the actions. So what we need to make sure of is that this sampling will result in the optimum, which will minimize the original value function. So even if some of these PTs are not up to date, it doesn't influence this important sampling at all, because it doesn't mind what these probabilities are. But of course, it will like decrease the effectiveness of this prioritized replay. Like when you sample a value which has a large TD error, and the TD error actually went down, so it's very small now, then we won't learn as much, right? So this fact that these TD errors are changing means that we have some estimate of like how much will we learn, what the size of the gradient will be there when we would train on this example, and this value might have easily gone down or up. But it's still better than just ignoring this fact at all and just sampling them completely uniformly, because many of them will actually have small TD errors. So when you look at the implementation that's directly from the paper, then we, like whenever you store something in the replay buffer, you store it with the probability, right? So we sample the transition according to these probabilities to alpha, that allows you to say how much to actually use the TD errors. Then we compute the sampling weight. This is just this formula here. And here is the divided by the maximum of all the weights. All right, so this will make sure that there is a reasonable limit. And then the TD error will, this is just the TD error by itself. And here, when we are doing the update, you can see that this is the weight of the important sampling ratio. And when we look, for example, at the off-policy method, the off-policy SARSA, then that's what we did there as well. Like in the off-policy SARSA, it's a bit longer than I hoped that it would be. It's still Monte Carlo, but I believe I will find it at least here. Yeah. So sorry, it took me so long. But here you can see that the update is the learning rate, then the important sampling ratio factor, and then this TD error, and then now it will be multiplied by the derivative of this Q action value function. So that's exactly what we have here. We have the learning rate is being kept somewhere later. So it's the learning rate is not there, but we have the important sampling ratio, this delta, that's the TD error, that's this thing. And then we have the gradient of the neural network, which is not here because it was a simple model, but we use it in the same way as before. And yep. So this is, we will see the individual improvements after this next paper. I'm sorry this sometimes happen if I have an image which is transparent. So I will of course fix it in the slides, but you wouldn't see anything. So let me show you the slides from the web. Here you can see that it can render it nicely. So the third improvement, which we will talk about, are the dual-link networks. It's a very weird name, I have to say. It always seems like they are going to fight or so. But the dual-link networks are just a simple idea of factorizing this state action function, right? So instead of computing the Q by itself, we will compose it from two quantities. And the one quantity will be the value function for the given state. That is like a default or some like a value function which doesn't depend on the action. And it will be predicted by the neural network just as a simple number. Like this upper part. And then we will have an advantage function. An advantage will tell us like whether it's better or worse to actually perform the action in the state, right? So in order to do the estimations like independently for each action, we say, okay, the estimate in this state and this action can be computed by the value function for the state plus the advantage for the action in the given state. And the idea is that this way we can actually more effectively train or understand that behavior doesn't depend on action. Sometimes the environment is very complex and it will go some way without you actually being able to influence it. And when you do the SA estimates independently, then you need to realize that you don't really have that much influence. But when you use this factorization, then the network is much faster being able to realize that the actions don't really influence anything, right? So even from different actions, you can learn effectively that this state doesn't really change much. The important thing is that when you compute this Q value estimate, you don't just sum it up. Like the idea would be to take the value function, like for the state without the action itself, and then the advantage function. But if we did it like this, then the network would really not be forced to actually use this part as the value function. Because then it would be not really much different than the Q network by itself. But the important thing, what we do is that we center the advantages before we use them. So even if the network says, here is the advantage, I cannot draw there. So even if for the, like we have the value estimate, which is just one number, and then the advantages, lot of them, right? And then we just sum them up. But the idea is that we make sure that this has an expectation of zero, right? It's centered. That way, if we want to increase the value of all of these estimates, we need to go through the top part. Because if we increase all of these, then nothing will change, right? They'll be centered again. So the expectation means that when some action has effect, when some behavior has effect or doesn't depend on the action, then it needs to go through this upper part of the network, while the behavior, which is action specific, need to go through the lower part. So we do this during computation and then leave backpropagation to deal with this, right? Backprop can do this reasonably simply. So it will do whatever we want, like this value function will really be the expectation independently on the actions, and then these actions will be just the changes, the advantages compared to the previous ones. This improvement is the most effective when in the environment you actually have situations where the actions themselves doesn't really matter much. So for example, consider this corridor environment. It's like a longer and longer corridor. You have a lot of actions, and you can either consider like 5, 10, or 20 actions. Only some of, the actions don't really, I don't know, let's say that they don't matter at all, right? Then whatever you are doing, okay, so to be specific, you have up, down, left, right, and then a no action, right? And you're going to have a lot of no actions. And the more actions you have, like, then the more data you need to learn efficiently, because you have more values which you need to estimate, and you need like to see them, you need to sample them, you need to see them in the exploration phase, and so on and so on. But with this factorization, you can share the estimates between the individual actions. So here you can see that like the log performance, here is the length of the training, and here there is an error here, and the dualing can like learn faster and get to the same result as the single version. And the more actions you have, the larger the effect is. This is like log and log, so even if it seems it's a bit larger, it's actually many factors larger than before. And they also like showed some examples on the real games. This is like a simple racing game, and the thing is that the value function has learned to look like at the road, right? Generally, to know whether you need to steer left or right to keep on the track. On the other hand, this advantage function has learned to look at the cars which are just next to you, so you can really like go to the left or to the right to avoid the car. And this like fact means that we can train fast, like we can consider these two effects independently and hopefully being more effective during training. So I promised I will show you the results with the prioritized replay here as well. So these are the original values, once again with either no ops at the beginning or human starts at the beginning. And first, the authors re-implemented the neural networks with a different set of hyperparameters, so you can see that the results, these are just the ones like a very similar architecture with different set of parameters. They also used some gradient clipping inside, so using the gradient clipping they could hear. And now from here to here, you can see the real improvement, right? So using the dualing architecture improves the median slightly, and the mean slightly. So that's one improvement, like from these two lines. Then another improvement is from here to here. That's by using the priority sampling, right? So once again, we can get better better means and slightly better median. And finally, these two can be combined and we can have a model which does both prioritized sampling and dual link architecture. It doesn't have such a high effect on median, but it has a substantial effect on the mean, right? And for the no-ops, it has effect also on the median. So both of these seem to help. So that's three. Now we will discharge one improvement very, very quickly, and that's multi-step learning, right? Up until now, we have been using just the one-step method because Q-learning was off policy. And then one paper said, okay, so let's do multi-step learning. And what they do is they just says, okay, let's consider this number of rewards and then return later. This way, the algorithm changes from off policy to on policy. This was by no means discussed in the paper at all. The authors just used it and it actually is better. So presumably this method is biased compared to some methods which would deal with the important sampling ratio or somehow, but the n-step method gives you more, right? So I think it's in a sense a bias-Ferenc trade-off where you are converging to a different result, but you have less noise in your data. In the later papers, we will see some improvements. So there nowadays people use the off-policy version of it, not exactly this one, but some different ways how to compute the estimates, which are multi-step and also like correctly off-policy if you want it. And why is this off-policy? That's because when you store the transition in the buffer, then whenever you are using it, then this action which you use there, that's the one sampled from the with the policy and that's time. So for one step method, it doesn't really it's fine. But if it's a two step method, then there are two actions there. And this second action, you would probably or you may do it differently because we have a different policy. So some of these rewards are biased by actually assuming that you are going to use some actions which you did not actually or you will not. Yeah, nevertheless, it still improved the results, so people just use it, why not? Now we have two more, so it's a lot of small things to take in, I agree. So this one was quick, and now we need just two more. Both of them will be more interesting than the improvement so far, because I would say that all of them were quite minor. The two more improvements are first the noisy networks. The idea of noisy networks is to allow the neural network to actually influence the exploration, like the strength of the exploration. And the neural networks do it by allowing the weights and the biases, like the parameters of the neural network, to be perturbed, to be modified by some parametric noise function. So whenever you run the neural network, the weights and biases are somehow changed a bit according to this noise. So technically, if you have parameters of the neural network, theta, we will represent them using their means. That's what we had before, but we will also, for each parameter, have its variance, the standard deviation. Right, and then when we want to use the neural network, we will sample some epsilon. That's some zero mean noise with fixed statistics, and then we'll change the parameters of the neural network by using this standard deviation. So we have doubled the number of parameters in the network, and the first ones are the means, whatever it was before, and then we have standard deviations, which tells, which like allows the neural network to add some amount of noise to each of the parameters, and the network can control whether which parameters it wants to noise to be added to, and what the size of the noise will be. So if you have a fully connected layer, weight times input plus b, then with the noisy nets, we represent the weights by the weight matrix plus the matrix of standard deviations, which will be multiplied by the noise generated for them, and then the same thing for the bias. We will use these noisy networks only on the fully connected layers, so we won't really use them on convolutions. We need to generate a lot of noise, a lot of epsilons here. So much that it could influence the size or the time of prediction and training. So we need to do it somehow efficiently. So ideally, these epsilon would be just N01 or something, right? But there are really like millions of, or at least tens of thousands of, or hundreds of thousands of parameters, and generating that much noise, it's a bit difficult. The GPUs don't really have an instruction for it or something. So what we do two things. First, we will use the factorized noise, right? When we have a matrix of weights, we need the matrix of noise. So what we do is we create the, like we sample the noise for rows, we sample the noise for columns, and then the noise for one specific element is just the corresponding noise for row times the corresponding noise for column. And because we want to keep these statistics, what we do is we compute the square root of these noises. Right, we need to be sure for the signs to work correctly, but this allows us to generate substantially less noise data. If these matrices have n squared elements, we are just generating two n's. Also, the noise is shared for all the batch instances. So with these improvements, it can run reasonably fast. And with this random behavior is now embedded in the neural network. So we don't longer need to do the epsilon greedy strategy. Instead, our policies are greedy, and it's the neural network which is producing different output on every call. To show you the results, this is like the original DQN. We also have the dual-link DQN here, and you can see that the results are better when the noisy nets are being used compared to when they are not being used. And during training, you can see that at the beginning, the training is fine, very similar to the version without the randomization. But then the DQN seems to hit some threshold, not training at all or not training much, but the noisy nets can actually train even for a bit longer. It's nice to look at how these noise parameters evolve during training. So on the last layer, it seems that the exploration goes down, right? But even here, you can see that in this space invader, it doesn't really go to zero. It stays at some level and even oscillates a bit, but generally it seems to go down, even if we do something in the breakout. In the last layer, the variances, they can even go up, like for the roadrunner, for the breakout, they actually increase. So the network actually prefers stochastic policies, right, compared to just always the same greedy ones. The main message is just that different games probably require a different exploration strategy, and allowing the neural network to actually somehow encompass it allows the model to produce actually better results. you will see the final influence on the model in the yes, definitely, definitely. Well, I would just start with some given constant that for each of these like these means will be as usually the randomly generated, and these I would just say that they should be 0.1 or something, but I am not really sure. So let me show you what the paper says. That's this one. It will be probably too large, is it? Yes, it is. So let me move it a bit. Okay, let's down. No, it cannot, doesn't want to. Yep, sorry. So we are in the paper, so let's have a look at the initialization if I'll be able to find it. Ideally, Piper parameters. Yep. So they really start by setting everything to 0.5 divided by the number. Yeah, that makes sense. Divided by the size of the hidden layer, right? So generally we want like when we do this, right, we want these dot products to have a constant value at the beginning. So we take this when they use 0.5, but we need also to divide it by the square root of the size of the layer, right? Because when we are using these values, we will be summing n values of these numbers. So we need to normalize, because otherwise this effector would get larger if we used larger layers. I'm sorry if I'm not explaining it correctly, but that's exactly what we are doing during initialization. That, for example, the Glorot initialization has to deal with, right? That where there is some number of neurons in the input and the output of the layer, and when we generate the weights, we need to take these numbers in account. So that's what they do. And so the last improvement, but in a sense one of the most important one, is something called distributional reinforcement learning. The problem of the Q networks is that they just generate these QSA estimates. They don't give you any probability. They cannot capture stochastic policies nicely, even if the noisy nets somehow can. And that's maybe like disadvantages in many situations. We will talk about policy gradient methods in the future. Well, on the next lecture, actually. And they allow to capture the policy itself. So you can get the distribution over the actions. And that's nice. But these policy gradient methods, they are inherently on policy compared to this DQN, which can handle the experience replay buffers nicely. So people have tried to like converge to get like the best from both of these worlds. And one thing what we can do is we can do these policy gradient methods with some good of policy corrections, or we can somehow bring the distributions to the DeepQ networks. And this distribution RL is exactly like this side of this approach, right? So instead of the expected return, just a number, we will estimate the distribution of the expected return. So these Zs, they won't just be five or something. They will tell you, okay, so these are the returns, right? And in this Q, we just have this like one hot distribution of this with this mean or with this value. And with Z, we will actually model these returns by some distribution. That will allow us to model the behavior of the policy much better. And these distributions, they satisfy the so-called distributional Bellman equation, which is very similar as before, right? And that's what we use for convergence, right? For convergence, we use this fact that when we do one step, we should get to the same value function. So the Bellman equation for action value functions says you that Q is just R plus gamma times Q. It's very, very naively written. And the same thing actually holds for this distribution. So we can say, okay, this distribution of rewards can be computed by considering the distribution of returns, sorry, can be computed by a distribution of rewards plus gamma times the distribution of returns in the next state. And this equation has very similar properties to the normal operator. So once again, it is a contraction under a suitable metric. We use this max norm metric. This time we need to use the Wasserstein metric, but we can still prove many of these things as before. So that's what this approach does. Instead of estimating just one number, we are estimating the whole distribution. However, how to model a distribution? So the authors decide to go for like histogram version. So what they do, like they consider like a fixed support. So they consider the distribution of values from from V min, V minimum to V maximum, right? That's the maximum value and the minimum value. By default, they will be minus 10 and plus 10 in the end. And we take this range and divide it by what they called atoms. So for into n discrete uniformly distributed bins, right? So the support, so these values which we are interested in, well, they are the V minimum is the smallest one, the V maximum is the largest one, and this is like the equidistance length. So all these things will be just will be just uniformly distributed in this range. And we will, because we want a distribution, we will just use softmax, right? Because softmax can give us a distribution. We will generate, yeah. So our distribution says that this value Zi, these are these equidistant returns in the range which we are interested in, will be generated by the behavior with this probability pi, and this probability pi is the softmax of whatever the model predicts. So the model predicts for each state and for each action and for each bin, for this atom they call it, it generates some weight, and then these weights are normalized, like passed through a softmax, which generates us a distribution for every state and action. All right, so that's what the network will look like. Now we need to perform the Bellman update, right? That's how we train the weights normally, and that we are doing like reward plus gamma times the Q in the next state, right? That's our estimate of the return minus the Q in the given state. I just ignored the action. So let me just say V, right? That's what we do normally. So here we need to implement this part to compute the reward plus gamma times the distribution of rewards in the given state and action. However, it's a bit technical. And the problem is that this gamma times distribution has no longer the same support. So the atoms are different, right? Because we had some distribution and this gamma factor, it compressed it in these two directions. So now the atoms are different, like they moved. However, we need to remap them back to the original distribution. So after we have compressed it by gamma, we add the reward, so we can see we have this distribution, and then we need to represent this using this original support, using the original weight. So you can see that these orange ones are then used instead of the green ones. It's a bit technical, the description here, but what happens when you have some when you have some value and some probability for it, then what we want to do is we want to distribute it between the two supports. So let's say that we have, these are the supports of the original distribution. So we have this value with this probability, and we want to represent it using some probability for the values for these atoms. So what we will do is we will just use linear interpolation. So we will use some number of this, it will be put to the left side, and some number of this will be distributed to the right side. So that's the idea. Technically, what happens? So technically, this Z, so let's consider what the ith atom, so what the probability for Zi will be. Right, the Zi is, I don't know, the value 8 or something, and we want to know the probability. What we will do is we will look at the supports of this new distribution and measure the distance of these of all these atoms to the Zi. That's this one, right? So we are considering all possible. So for example, here consider this green bar, right? That's the I one, Zi. Now we consider all the green ones and take the ones which are immediate neighbors of this Zi, right? So if this green bar is here, we'll just ignore it. If it is here, we are just ignoring it. But if it is an immediate neighbor of Zi, then we will consider it. We will take as much probability mass as is the distance of this element to us, right? So this R plus gamma Zj, this is the center of this green distribution. We compute we clip it with the maximum and minimum, right? So we don't allow it to go out of range. Then we measure the distance with respect to Zi, right? So this is the distance between the center of one of these green ones and the orange ones, and then we divide it by the length. So we measure the distance by the number of atoms in this distribution. And if it is between 0 and 1, so it's an immediate neighbor, then we consider it. Otherwise, it will be 0 because it's 1 minus, right? So if it's too far, we just ignore it. So this is like a very weird way to implement the linear interpolation, but that's what they showed in the papers, why I rewrote it. Yeah, and then we multiply it by the probability of this jth atom, right? So that's how we can implement this update, and then we just train it to minimize, well, this time not the mean square error, instead we minimize the Kullback-Leibler divergence between the current distribution and the one step update, right? Normally we are doing mean square error, but the mean square error is also an KL divergence between the prediction and the value, assuming that they have normal error. So this is like a string generalization. Here is the algorithm. So when we want to implement it, we compute in order to do it correctly. So So let's go through the atoms in this new projected distribution, right? So we consider this atom, we multiply it by gamma, we add the reward, clip it to the maximum. Here we find the index of the atom of the original distribution, which is the closest, right? And this is like a real value. We take the upper and lower bound. So this has these two nearest neighbors in the original atoms. And here we just distribute the probability using linear interpolation. And here we compute the cross entropy, the same scale divergence in this case. Well, we compute it. So what do you mean? This is what the network estimates. This is what the network estimates. And this reward, that's just a number. But when we see different rewards in the same state, the network learns to actually predict the distribution, right? So at the beginning, it probably predicts just the steep or one hot values, but after some number of training, maybe it will sometimes see some other values. So this will allow it to actually like see the whole distribution. Because so you asked where you can see distribution, and you can see the distribution in time by seeing multiple transitions from the same state. Yes. Yep, it's still the same. So it's this R just plays the role of an offset that can be here, seen here. It's just really just moves the distribution back and forth. So there are some illustrations. First, you can see that compared to the prioritized replays and dual link and all these things which we talked about, it can once again improve the results. And there is an illustration here. So in this case, this is just a Space Invader game, and the what we need to do here is we need to I'm not really sure we need to move right. No, we need to do nothing. It doesn't really seem so. Okay, so the idea is that like a lot of these actions have like returns zero. Right, like many of these actions, in which we don't win immediately, they give us a zero. So, if you are very like near the ends of the distribution, you can still put the whole probability mass there. But for this green action, which for some reason, yeah, okay, so I understand. So we cannot shoot the laser now, because if we shoot the laser now, we would miss, right? So shooting is a bad thing. So if we shoot now, we will probably lose, because the monster will just like eat us and we'll die. Also, if we move left and right, can do something. It's not as one hot, but it doesn't seem that great. But the best thing seems to be just wait, right? Because if we just wait, then this creature will just move a bit, and then we'll be able to fire. In this case, the authors, they also say that it's surprising that there is this nice bell-shaped curve, even if the environment is actually deterministic in these games. And they offer the explanation that that's actually caused by this update. Like during this update, we are doing some linear interpolation. We are moving the weights around. So it may cause these distributions to actually look so nice, even if they are not that great in reality. Here there are some other illustrations. Here the agent is not really sure. So it seems, well, we are losing, but maybe something is happening, but after some time you can see now the agent is more sure that we will just lose. Here you can see that different actions can really have different distributions. Here the model is not sure whether it will survive, but after a small, like after actually firing, right, this probably is moving to the right. Right. We can see that all of these actions actually have the same, very similar distribution. The question is how to choose the hyperparameters, right? So what the V min will be, V max will be, and most importantly, how many atoms will we use, like how coarse or how fine grained do we allow the distribution to be. Here you can see the different number of atoms of returns which we model in the distribution, and for some of the games it doesn't really matter. For Pong it works well for all of them, but for some of these you can see that the more atoms we have the better. And for example here for the SeaQuest, only this 51 returns can actually learn something, using smaller amount of it, so using coarser distributions will make the training actually not work very much. Well, it wasn't like it's still better than with the DQN, but still we can get a substantially better behavior with 51. So when you look at the results, it's obvious that 51 atoms are being used. Yep. So once again, it's 2 minutes past the lecture. I'm really sorry. Let me just please connect all these things together. If you want to leave, and I won't be feeling offended if you just do and see the recording from the web page. However, now we have talked about all these improvements, and we will just put it together into one big model, which we will call Rainbow. So we are doing performing n-step updates. We are modeling distribution, and the loss is the KL divergence. So the estimated return is the rewards of n steps plus the estimation of the return in the next state, which we have. This is the whole distribution, and then we minimize the KL divergence. We use the prioritized replay with respect to the TD error. So for our case, it means according to this KL divergence. We use the weight for it, and then we use the dual link architecture. So the model predicts both the value function, like this ZSA is being predicted from two different distributions. One models the from two set of weights, one models the result based only on state, and the other models the results like as an advantage function. So it uses the states and action, but the advantage is sum to one, right? So this is the probability of a given state and action, the probability of the item I for the given state and action. So it's a bit weird, or a bit long, but well. This softmax here is for the distribution, right? And then this is the dual link architecture thing. And we replace all linear layers by their noisy net equivalents. The hyperparameters look reasonably similar. So, well, similar. We don't use any exploration. The noisy nets are initialized with some fixed variance of noise. The target network period is 32,000 frames, even larger than it was before. Extremely small learning rate. And then in this prioritization, we use this priority exponent of 0.5. So when we are sampling here, we consider the error, but not in the full strength. We somehow like use a combination between the uniform sampling and the sampling according just to the TD errors. This import prioritization, important sampling beta, that's the one which tells us how to account for the fact that we are sampling according to these probabilities and we should sample uniform. So you can say that they start with 0.4 and they are increasing, right? So generally they think that their estimates get less noisy, so they can actually believe it more and they can do the important sampling more strongly. Three-step returns, 51 atoms, and minus 10 to 10 distribution. These are the final results. Like each of these improvements independently, they improve the results compared to the original implementation, but combining them all together is actually beneficial. So here you can see, this is why it's called a rainbow, right? Like this color version, which contains everything from these individual models. So you can see the original DQN is the gray one. These are the various improvements, the noisy networks and the double deep Q learning, prioritized reply, and the orange one, the highest individual one, is the distributional DQN, and we can get to substantially larger results by combining all things together. So here on the left side, we can see like the individual models and the combination. Here on the right side, we can see the combination, that's the rainbow one, minus the individual improvements, right? These things don't need to be the same. Like here you can see that the distributional RL is giving you the most, but maybe it's also encompassed in the other features. So this tells you like how much is this one improvement needed, right? Whether it can be carried out by the rest of the improvement. So if you look at this, you can see that the green and the violet one, that's dual link architecture and double learning, by themselves don't add that much. Like their role can be fulfilled by the rest of the improvements. But the noisy networks, the multi-step, the priority sampling, and the distributional improvements all are a crucial thing. And when combined all together, just two of them would not be enough. But when you have three of them, all of them, you can really get here, right? So generally, it seems that the priority plus distribution plus the multi-step is an important combination. There are various other graphs which you can look at if you are interested. It shows you the same values as before, but this time the games are divided by the games where we get at least 20% of the human performance, 50, 100, 200, and 500. So you can see like for different environments, for different hard environments, what the individual improvements of the elements are. I don't really think that there is too much like some nice conclusions, and here you can even see the results for the individual games. So if you are interested, you can see which improvements helped on the individual games at all. And that's my last slide. So thank you that you have bared with me for these 8 minutes. If you want to go, then we will see each other on Wednesday on the practicals. We will have the results of our first competition and talk about the next one. So it will be fun, I hope. And if you still have any questions, then of course I'm still here. So don't hesitate to ask me. And if you are leaving, then bye-bye. So it seems there are no questions today. It is probably like that. Okay, so really no questions. Then enjoy your evening and see you on Wednesday. Bye-bye. Stopping the recording.